Welcome to the Talking Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Wade Billings, and today my special guest is Michael Bright, the founder and CEO of Continuous Confidence Consulting. During our conversation, we examine how instilling confidence in your workforce can help create a culture that fosters innovation, promotes trust, and encourages risk-taking. So grab your favorite drink, sit back, and join us for another exciting episode of Talking Culture. Welcome to Talking Culture. I'm your host, Wade Billings, and today my guest is Michael Bright. Michael and I have known each other for quite a number of years. In fact, we worked in the same company years and years ago, and since then, Michael has gone on to fame and fortune, do great, amazing things with his company called Continuous Confidence Consulting. But the reason I wanted to talk to Michael, amongst many reasons, is he has an incredibly interesting perspective and opinion and perceptions of culture because of what he does. So with that, welcome, Michael. How are you?
I am good. Thank you, Wade, for having me.
You're more than welcome. It's my honor. I always like to ask my guests three questions. It's kind of an icebreaker, you know, party trick. So if you're game, we'll get into those.
Sure.
Go ahead. Excellent. Well, Michael, first, what brings you joy?
Believe it or not, I absolutely love having people experience aha moments. Those are the things that bring me joy. Even when I have aha moments, that, you know, I'm reading something, I'm connecting dots, I'm laterally thinking or learning. That just gives me absolutely amazing joy to experience that. So that's, it's awesome. Aha moments. Yeah.
I love that. Life is, I was talking to somebody yesterday and we were discussing things that could go wrong. And they said, I wish to avoid those aha moments. And I'm like, wait a minute. It's not the aha moments I want to avoid, because those are the ones I want. It's the uh-oh moments.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
So let's try to minimize the uh-oh, but maximize the aha, because that's, you know, that's where the inspiration comes from. So
yes, absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that, Michael. Second question is, when was the last time you felt a sense of thriving, and what brought that on?
Well, I would actually have to say, if we're talking about from a business perspective or from a work perspective or even a life perspective, it actually is where I'm currently working with a current job. Bamboo HR is a company that I work for. They have discovered a way to make sure that you are the same person outside of work as you are in work. So they've created that culture. That's kind of what got me interested in what you were talking about. That thriving comes from being able to experience the same both in work and outside of work and allow yourself to grow. So I would have to say I've been thriving for many years, since I've had that experience. So
that's been great. That is amazing. I would like to, I'm a little jealous. That's that's awesome to be thriving for many, many years. That's awesome. Yeah. So nice segue, because my last question is, when did you first become aware of the impact and the implication of work culture?
Oh, man. So I first discovered it when I first left college. It was at my first job. I was a software engineer for a QA engineer for Novell, actually, in Utah. And within 5 months, I went through a layoff at Novell. I didn't get laid off, but I watched other people get laid off.
Right.
And the experiences that some of the developers were doing, you know, or the mentality, I don't know if they ever went back and did this, but they were talking about, okay, we need to check our bugs back into the code and just, you know, just to stick it to the man or something like that. And, just the experiences. But I, you know, I could also remember and talking with people about how years ago, their first CEO, Ray Norda, was mm-hmm. one that they talked to, and they loved Ray Norda.
Right.
Being able to, he would come and talk to people, sit down and get to know them and understand their perspective and what their jobs were and what caused problems. And so the dichotomy between that of where I was at versus what the culture was prior, that was like my first experience straight out of that. And then ever since then, I've just had experience after experience giving me nuances into how culture really makes a big difference, especially in the software. I only speak from a software engineering perspective, from a software company, right?
Right.
But I've grown to learn that the majority of the experiences I've been going through are par for the course that other people are going through at the same time throughout the industry. So
it's amazing to me how little has changed over the three decades that I've been in a professional career. I see, you know, history repeating itself.
Yeah.
And you, it's interesting that you bring up Ray Norda and Novell. I had the distinct honor and privilege of working with some of the very early people at Novell, Ed Ekstrom, Dana Doggett, Craig Burton. You know, these are people that, if you were there, they were, you know, the Dana was the one that wrote Land School, and which became then another. It was their desktop management product.
Yeah, Landesk and
Landesk. And stuff like that's that. It.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Dana, I'll kind of single him out because I think he was emblematic of the culture, the early culture of Novell. Very grounded, very humble. The man, I think, by the time I met him, was worth a few million dollars. And drove a minivan, and
a beat up minivan. Yes, I mean, one that's absolutely falling apart, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. This was not off the showroom floor kind of minivan. This was it's seen some years, and yes. Struggled paying more than $6 for a haircut. And I think, like I said, there's that Novell, and then as the years went, and you had other CEOs come in. Eric Schmidt and some others, each one of them put their fingerprint on the culture. And by the time Novell, who at one time owned the world, started its slow descent into irrelevance, I think the culture had been depleted.
Yeah, was my experience. I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. So I mentioned that you have an interesting perspective and perception of culture because of what you do. So if you would give us a little history of continuous confidence, because I find that alliteration awesome, but
yes.
the name is equally as intriguing to me. So how did you come to continuous confidence and what's behind that?
So continuous confidence is a methodology that I started to adopt after I left the company you and I were working for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's tailored around continuous integration, continuous delivery, which is an industry standard, right? Which we just talk about, how do we test our code? How do we get it out the door? What kind of actions and processes do we do to put in place in order to roll code smoothly?
Right.
And believe it or not, Wade, I'm gonna rib you a little bit. I remember being in your go no go meetings. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Okay. Whenever I talk about this, I just have to talk about the go no go meeting because it's perfect as to what I see, the way I see things. In a go-no-go meeting, for those who don't know what it is, it is led by QA, and they and I will give you a verbatim. This is literally every go no go meeting that I've ever come into, and so I might drive up a little bit of PTSD for a moment. But you let me know if I'm spot on.
Oh, I will.
The QA walks in. All the stakeholders are in the room, right? And the QA starts like this. Well, we've run some tests. We're currently running some tests. And when those tests are done, we have a couple of other things we need to look at. Yep. If all of those are done, then I think we're okay to go.
Yeah.
And then it goes to the next stakeholder, right? And the stakeholder does something amazing. Points to QA and says, well, if you say it's okay, then it's a go. And it's every single person that goes around the corner. They all say the same thing. And the reason they do that is so that when things go south, they have a fall guy that they can point back to and say, well, why in the world would you do that? Why would you allow that to go out? So after all of that I went through, I was experiencing and thinking through the CI/CD process in the new after I'd left the company, and I started to realize, do you know why we test our code? I want to hear from you. Why do you test code? Why do you think developers should test their code?
Oh, well, there's a multitude of reasons, but my reason is to build confidence around it. I mean,
okay.
I want to be sure. So recently I had somewhat of a germane experience where I wrote something, and I think I posted about this on LinkedIn, and the first time I ran it, it ran without error. And I'm like, I don't think that's ever happened to me. Uh-huh. And so I sat back and I thought, my first thought was, holy crap, I've done something wrong.
Yep. I get it. Yep.
And when I posted, in fact, there were a number of comments saying, well, you didn't write unit tests. I'm like, no. I wrote all the tests. Everything. And it was not that complex of a piece of code, right? So, sure. You know, but still, it was, I think as software engineers, in the culture that we work in software engineering, but I think this this extends to other cultures. You know, medicine comes to mind, manufacturing, logistics come to mind, where the tolerance for failure is razor thin. And, you know, you are, at least from my experience as an engineer, we are conditioned that writing defective code is like not a venial sin, but a cardinal sin.
Yeah.
Right. And you have QA there to save us all.
Yeah. Right? To save us all. They're the fall guy. That's the difference. Right. But I think Wade, what you talked about is really a difference in perspective than what other people think about. If you think about, if we go back to when we had go, no go meetings, okay, the whole reason we did QA testing and the whole reason we did all those tests was just not to have bugs in production. Mm-hmm. But here's where it really came down. When I thought about that, I'm like, well, that's why everyone worries about whether it's a red or a green or, you know, whatever color of the CI system it is, right? And it means nothing. In reality, the reason we test our code is to make sure we don't blow production up. That's literally the only reason why we do it, right? And so what I started looking at is, instead of writing tests to pass, I write tests to build my confidence. And if you start doing that, it changes your perspective. It changes your culture.
Yeah.
We start thinking about testing and we start thinking about software development in a way of, how can I be confident that this code will work the way it's supposed to work? Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, I'm going to make sure that my tests pass.
Right.
There's a slight difference.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've found that when teaching people that, teaching them about confidence, it actually changes everything in the culture because now we start looking at it from a departmental perspective. So I'll give you another example that we started doing. We had a moment when we were rolling code, and we weren't rolling code. We were updating to a minor version of our system, right? Mm-hmm. And it broke. And we're like, what the heck? And we found really quickly, we were able to find that in our code, we were writing to a field, setting a field that actually became read-only when we updated the versions.
Oh, oops.
And we didn't know that, right? It was so hidden in the documentation. But what was amazing about it was that an architect was able to write some unit tests on it to be able to say, okay, we've got it. And we took it, we rolled it about 15 minutes. What had happened, you know, it was a big amount of people were affected, but within 15 minutes we were back to normal. But here's where the confidence comes in. When I went to customer support, I said, how are things going? And at that time they're saying, we are slammed. I mean, right. We just don't have the number of people. We've got, you know, emails and customers we got to relate to and all this. And I said, tell you what, how about this? I can tell you right now, we now have tests in place. You can tell your customers this. We have tests in place to ensure that we will never fail the way we did again. And we're going to turn off our releases, and we're going to wait until you tell us that you're ready for us to turn this back on.
Right.
What do you think their response was?
The supports or the customers?
Both. Let's talk customers. What do you think the customer's response was?
I think the customers went, got it. Right?
Yeah.
I
mean, we get it. Yeah.
Yeah, as a customer, I want to know two things. What happened? And maybe my own morbid curiosity, why did it happen?
Yeah.
But the most important one is, what are you doing to make sure that never happens again? And again, exactly. It's not that you'll never go down or that you're not going to have an incident, because, hey, we live in an imperfect world.
Yeah.
And especially in software.
Yeah.
But it's that thing. So you tell me, like you said, we were trying to write to a read-only field. We found out about it as soon as we pushed, you know, deploy. And now we know it's there. And we're never going to make that same mistake twice.
Yeah. We have tests in place that ensure that we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
Perfect. That was the customer's response. What do you think the customer service's response was?
That one could be a little bit more dynamic, right? Because you can go, you know, if it's somebody that's been in support for a while, they're going to go, you know what? I sort of trust what you just said. And I think I can deliver that message with confidence and impart that confidence to my customer. But again, we live in an imperfect world, and I've kind of heard this before.
And you're absolutely right. And that's why I told him the second thing.
Mm-hmm.
We won't turn our releases back on until you tell us that you're okay. Yep. Why? Because I have to rebuild that confidence that was broken between customer support and development. And we also said, we also need a channel or a way to actually communicate with development, saying, hey, there's something really bad. And so we created a Slack channel to be able to immediately say, if there's a fire, boom, raise a flag and let's start chatting. And you can immediately have developers right there helping you, figuring out what's going on and helping you through. All we did was focus on the confidence of that communication part between the two. And we came up with a new process that even today is used. And customer support has our back. They're always talking about our engineers, saying, hey, they're some of the best of the best. We love these guys, and they can't speak any higher than them. Right.
Yeah.
So when we make mistakes, they're like, hope it's okay. They're on it. We know they're there. Right. I think that's a great example of how confidence, that is part of culture. When we focus on the confidence inside of a culture, we actually find solutions that we weren't even thinking about.
Right.
Absolutely. Which is really kind of cool.
I'm going to stop you there because we need to take a break. But on the other side of this break, you once said something to me. Well, not once, recently said something to me about how confidence can get you past the hard times, which I want to know more about, because I think that there's definitely a cultural aspect there. So let's take a break. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about that. Sound good? Sure.
Yep.
Awesome. And we're back. So before we went to break, I said, you know, confidence can help us move past the hard times. And I want to tie that into a cultural context, right? Because if you have a culture that not only tolerates, but encourages failure, right? Not like, hey, go fail, right? But says that, hey, in order for us to be innovative, in order for us to have confidence and not to be afraid of our own code or our product or our customer or our service or whatever it is that we're producing, we have to be willing to fail. And not only do we have to be willing to fail, but we have to know that it's going to be safe.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're not going to get smacked with a knobbly stick, but instead we're going to have an empathetic experience, and our leaders are going to say, learning opportunity. What did we learn? Right. How can confidence, that kind of culture, Michael, in your experience and in your perspective, how could that help you get through the bad times? And I'm not just talking about when things are going bad in production, but let's go back to the layoffs. Let's go back to an economic downturn. Let's go back to a pandemic, right? How can that help you?
What you're going to see is actually why confidence is so important. When you're describing a toxic environment, okay, which is kind of a toxic culture, okay, I will guarantee you that they are frozen, meaning they're not taking action at all.
Right.
They're kind of circling the drain, trying to figure out what's my next thing to do. How do I? And it applies even from what you were saying. I got laid off. I don't know what to do. And you listen to everything that goes on and LinkedIn and others, and they're always saying, "Well, now my confidence is shot because I got laid off." Right? We're always talking about it. Okay. This is the key. In order to take action in anything in life, you have to be confident enough to take the next step.
Right.
Now, I didn't say you have to know what the next step is. You just have to be confident enough to take the next step. Right. So high performant environments and cultures play into how do I build confidence in my people, right? And if I can do that, then they're willing to make mistakes. And I'm willing to have those mistakes taken as well. So I often have, like, people will ask me, they're always managers. They're always like mid-level, you know, directors on up. And they always love to use this term. And everyone, I mean, it's a drop term. It drives me crazy. And they say, how do I instill urgency in my software engineers? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Do you know how I answer that question? I turn it back on them and I say, do you trust them?
Mm.
And inevitably, almost every single time, they will say no.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, then what do they have to do in order to gain your confidence?
Right.
That's what you need to tell them. And that all of a sudden changes everything in that perspective. And so what you're going to find, and this is me, this is what I found. the number one killer of confidence. If you want to obliterate confidence in an organization, the only thing you need to do is inject urgency into the picture.
Mm.
That's it. That's all you have to do. Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk scrum teams for a moment. You've been on enough, you know, you've been with software engineers. They're absolutely hilarious. You inevitably, we always get up to the end of the sprint. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about, right? Uh-huh. We get up to the end of the sprint and the manager comes up. It's the very last day. The software engineer is coding. The manager steps next to them. They're still typing code. And the first thing the manager does is say, hey, are you going to have that done by tomorrow?
Yep.
What happens to the developer?
I can tell you there's a physiological response, there's a mental yes. response. I mean, yes. it changes stop. The dynamic. Yeah.
They absolutely stop.
Yeah.
They back up and they go, and then they don't know. Right?
I see that play out so many times.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Or even my most favorite one is, let's talk real urgency. I just blew production up.
Right.
Okay. The very first thing that I call it the Han Solo moment.
Mm.
Okay. Where every developer's like, and they're pounding the keyboard and they're like, okay, I got it. Roll it. And it rolls. And then only partial fix, and the door closes. No, and Han Solo is like, I got it. And the door closes. Okay. And it takes you two or three times to roll code to actually fix the problem.
Right.
The reason why is because you've destroyed their confidence the whole time. They don't know what action to take, but they're frantic to take one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you have a culture that is built around urgency, and I have to be careful here because there's a difference between urgency and needing to go fast. There's a difference there. Okay. So if I can confidently go quickly, that's what we want. I don't care about timelines. And I love to do this with directors and with VPs and all that. And they say, well, I got to have this feature and it needs to be out on Thursday. And I said, okay, what's more important? The Thursday or the feature?
Right.
Well, and they say the feature. And then why are you talking to me about Thursday?
Yeah.
Right. Let's talk about work. Like if we're talking with other people, now there is a way that we need to, from higher up, we need to manage. Like if I'm a director talking to a VP, I need to talk to them about timelines. Oh, we're estimating that this will be here. And that's right. totally doable. But if I'm going to talk from director down, I only want to talk about work and say, hey, how much work is left on this? And when someone describes that, you can really easily interpret that into a calendar item, you know, some kind of date and how much work is left. So it's stuff like that. And I even talk about like sprints. I absolutely hate that agile development has turned into this almost, I'm going to bombastically beat you over the head with what you said. The sprint is a 2-week sprint and you promised to get this work done. I said, no. I estimated that it might take this long. I'm allowed to be able to say, hey, this has blown up because I didn't know about the scope or about this or someone was sick, you know?
Right.
Always trying to get people to release something at a given time and meet up to that deadline, all you're doing is causing it to take longer.
Right.
And that I think is, now I'm going to tie that all back to what you were saying. How do you get better? How do you get through the hard times? Well, it's all in, what do I need to do to build my confidence?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. It's in order to take action. And I don't care what the action is, you know? I remember talking with one CEO of a company one time, and we were just chatting out on my lawn, and I brought up continuous confidence. And he's like, well, that's weird. And I said, no, it's really easy. And he's like, well, I mean, you can't help me with this. And I said, look, what's the one thing that's on your mind incessantly right now that you just wish you could do? And he said, well, I need to set up a phone rotation for a survey. He was a small business owner, right? And he's like, a phone rotation so that I'm not the only one on call. And I said, how long have you been trying to do that? And he said, well, for about 6 months. I said, that's the number one thing you need to do in order to grow your business. And he just stopped and like, what the? I've been trying to figure this out for 6 months, how to like grow my business. But that's the thing.
Right.
You need confidence, and you don't feel confident enough to grow your business because you don't have that set up.
Exactly.
And his jaw dropped, hit the ground. And he's like, whoa, how does that work? So that's why I've even been in presentations, right? Do a presentation and someone is asking me a question later. And I said, well, what's the number one thing? And they tell me, I said, go do it. And he said, I've been spending 10 months trying to figure this out. Our whole department's been trying to figure this out and we don't know what's going on. I said, well, go do it. That's the number one thing that's doing it. And he goes, oh, thanks. It's like I had to give him my blessing or some kind of, thing, but it's building the confidence of the person. That's all it is.
I love that, right? Because there's so much wrapped up in that. As you were talking about, the guy that was trying to figure out the hunt group for his phone.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the problem is. It's the win. It's the success. And it's because once you go, you know what? I didn't think I could do that. I can do that. What else can I do? Last night I had to fix a washing machine. I've never taken apart a washing machine in my entire life, but I looked at the rates that a repairman wanted to charge me for a weekend visit. I'm like, you know what? Worst case scenario, I break it worse than it already is, and I'm going to have to pay for it anyway. So I might as well take a chance. And took it apart, figured out the problem, put it back together again. My wife now thinks I am a small appliance repairman.
Did you watch any YouTube videos to figure out how to do it? That's how you build your confidence, right?
Yes. Exactly.
That's the same thing with me. I'm like, I'm not going to touch it until I feel confident enough to do it, right?
Yeah, but it took literally, 3 minutes of me watching to be able, because all I needed to know is how does the back come off and what to do with this seal ring that goes around. I don't even know the terminology for it, but there's a, a seal that goes around the drum, the gasket, and how to get that. And then there's a spring loaded ring that goes around, and that thing's a bugger to get back on. So I had to figure that one out. But the point is I went into it questioning myself, thinking, am I going to be able to do this? And then I just went, you know what? I'm going to know once I start doing it.
Yes.
And I could sit here and question myself and play out all the possible scenarios and talk myself into not doing it. Mm-hmm. Or instead, to pick up a screwdriver and start turning a screw.
That's right.
See what happens. But also knew that what's the worst thing that could happen? I end up having to pay a repairman to come out.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Why don't we have that in our cultures today, Michael? Why don't we have from, the CEO all the way through the organization to the person who answers the phone at the front desk, that they have this audacious sense of confidence that they can do anything?
You want the real answer?
Yes.
Because we don't care enough about the other person.
Ooh. Ooh.
So I'll give you another perspective. When we're in a heated conversation and we're in a disagreement in business or something like that, right? I have one opinion, you have another opinion. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're always trying to prove our opinion.
Right.
But if I look at it from the perspective of a confidence, I can change that in a heartbeat. So if I were to look at you and say, oh, okay, hold on. It looks like you don't have confidence in what I am saying. What can I do to help you feel more confident about what I'm saying? They'll answer you one or two ways, or you would. You would tell me, you are so completely full of it. That's not even close to what I'm thinking. And you'll actually tell me what the heck you're thinking,
right?
Which is way better than arguing for another 20 minutes, right?
Absolutely, right.
The second one will actually be, well, I need you then to do X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. And I know what the next thing is, and we don't have to be arguing anymore.
Right.
And so the reality is we are so caught up in us, in ourselves, that we fail to be looking towards the other person.
Right.
And a lot of that, we can't build our own confidence without building the confidence of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So when I write tests and other things like that, I'm letting the code build my confidence.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
It does.
And then when I take that and I give that option to another person, they then build, I am building their confidence and they build confidence back to me.
Right.
And that's how you build confidence in a culture. But you have to focus on confidence. And it seems subjective and weird, but it is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone has different ways of feeling confident.
Right.
And that's okay. So your culture, you have to focus on confidence in order to build your culture in a confident way.
I sort of love that, right? And I think that the confidence has, I'm just thinking of other synonyms, right? Trust.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Consideration, right?
Yep.
Belief.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, dispel with urgency, but what popped into my mind is, well, can we replace urgency with importance?
Yes, I think you can.
Mm-hmm. And in order for me to convey to you importance, there's one thing that you have that has to be there, and that's trust / confidence. Because if I come to you and say, this is the most important work that we could be doing right now, you have mm-hmm. to go, you know what? I trust your judgment because you've said this to me before and you were right. Or mm-hmm. you said this to me before and you were wrong, but you came back around and you told me why things had changed. Or you explained why you were wrong rather than just let it sit out there, right? And I think far too often as leaders, I don't know who's teaching this. Maybe it's our big culture, our society, but we have a hard time admitting to our mistakes. And we have a hard time coming back and saying, wow, you know what? I really whiffed on that one. Mm-hmm. I thought I knew what was going on. We started doing it and I found out I was wrong and I didn't respond quickly enough or whatever. But you admit it and you say, you know what? But this is what I learned. And this is, you know what? Some good did come out of it because we learned about this kind of stuff. But at the same time, that really sucked and I'm sorry.
And that rebuilds confidence.
Yes.
What you just described. See, it's all about that.
Yeah.
It's the most amazing thing to think about. It really is.
I'm confident we need to take one more break.
Okay.
But when we come back from it, I always want to leave listeners with something concrete that they can do, right? Because it's great that we have this conversation and that they, you know, they're either yelling in the car or nodding their heads or shaking it violently, whatever the response is. But I want to be able to provide them with something that they can go to work the next day and go, if I can do this one thing, I can have a positive impact on my culture. And it may be that their culture is awesome. Well, you want to keep it that way. Or maybe their culture is starting to slip into toxicity. You know, and maybe it's the one thing at the right time by the right person that pulls the thing around. I don't know. But I always like to give one thing that they can do. So think about that, and then we'll come back from break, and we'll talk about that. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome. And we're back. So before we went on break, I asked you to think of one thing that people can do to help build confidence, either in themselves or their team member, or even, frankly, their leadership. Because sometimes leadership loses their confidence. And, you know, maybe me going up to my CEO and saying, you know, you're good, right? We're good here. and we can do this. Maybe that can help. I don't know. What is your advice?
It's going to sound a little silly, but I'm very adamant about this. Start using the word confidence or confident in your culture.
Yeah.
Literally, that's all you need. It's such an interesting word because confidence is not a normal part of our vernacular.
No.
You just don't hear it in the business world because it's so subjective. People just dismiss it. Mm-hmm. But if you start using the word confidence and confident in your everyday terminology with people, it will open up. And believe it or not, they'll start to respect you. I think that's one of the other things that I would say added to yours, where you're talking about confidence and trust, things that is respect. If you don't have trust in someone, at least just respect them.
Right.
Start by respecting them. And if you respect them and you start talking about confidence, they'll start to trust you.
It's hard, though. I'm going to push back on you a little bit. It's hard, at least for me. I can only speak from my point of view or my experiences, but it's hard for me to respect somebody if I don't at least have a little bit of trust in them or a little bit of confidence in them. And that's possibly a personal hangup, right? Where, you hear respect is earned, not given. And then you have other people say respect is given. And, you know, it's just,
yeah,
there's a number of different ways that people position respect and wield it. Some wield it as a hammer and, and others, you know, as an olive branch. I would like to think I'm more on the olive branch side, but still I betrayed myself by saying sometimes I have a hard time respecting somebody if I don't have trust in them.
So then ask yourself a question then. I would turn that example that I gave you where what can I do to give you more confidence? Reverse it. What do they need to do in order to gain my confidence and then tell them about it?
Then tell them.
That's it.
Yeah. So simple, yet we don't do it.
But it's hard. I'm not going to say it's they're simple ideas, but it is hard unless we have the idea of confidence ever present in our mind.
Yeah.
And that we start talking about it and we start bringing it into our vernacular. It literally changes software engineering, at least. I know it can change customer service. Like, think about it from a sales perspective, right? How can I, if you're on a conversation with a prospective customer, right? And they're weighing the matter between, well, who am I going to go with? You know, and you say, hey, wait a minute. Doesn't look like you're really confident in our solution meeting your standards. What would we have to do in order for you to feel confident about it? If they end up saying, you know, it's just the money. Well, okay, great. Whatever. You can't really do much about that. But then if they start telling you the real things that they're worried about, they're tied to you now. They're bound. They're like, I have an invested interest in what's going on.
Right.
Right. And I think this is the point. I think that confidence opens something. It opens our hearts. Okay. There's a teaching that I am infinitely aware of that I just absolutely love. And I've read about this teaching, and it's a word is saying, you know, they can see with their eyes and they can hear with their ears and they understand with their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think we far too often in business, we get into the, I see something, I hear something, but I don't understand.
Right.
And when we start talking about confidence, it opens our hearts in the sense that we start to ask questions. And the moment we start to ask questions, we can come to understand something.
Yeah.
And that's really what a confident culture is all about. That's really what culture is understanding who people are in our organization.
I think when you understand, then you can start to relate. And when you relate, you start to think about them. You consider them.
Yes.
And, you know, I, I'm thinking of, you know, Band of Brothers, and I'm thinking of the foxhole situation where you've got, you know, some, if you're in a foxhole with a bunch of people and you're under attack, the likelihood of those people being lifelong friends and confidants is incredibly high, right? Because you bond. And unfortunately, that's kind of a trauma bond, but there's the essence of that is if you have that connection, whatever that connection might be, a shared outlook, a shared passion, a shared mission, the confidence that comes with that, that people are going to take care of you and you'll take care of them, is incredibly transformative. I've seen that transformation firsthand.
And isn't it interesting that it feeds into another word that like every single CEO on the face of the planet talks about? Alignment.
Absolutely.
You know,
right.
So confidence helps you align to each other and to where you're going.
Yeah. If you cannot, if you cannot explain to somebody what you're doing, why you're doing it, how it's going to impact them, and that's the big one. And finally, what does success look like? When do we know we're done? Right? Mm-hmm. If you can explain those things, the likelihood of you building confidence and gaining clarity and alignment and commitment skyrockets. If you don't do those things, or if you leave one of those things out, the likelihood starts to drop off pretty exponentially. Right. But it's the impact that I think, again, as leaders, we forget about, because that's a hard one. Sometimes it's hard to quantify. Sometimes it's easy to quantify, but it's hard to talk about because, you know, sometimes the impact isn't great. Sometimes it's, hey, we got to do this, and this is why we got to do this, and this is what we're going to get out of it. But that also means that we've got to work extra hard, or we've got to put in extra hours, or we've got to abandon that project that everybody is finding incredibly enjoyable for something that's a little bit more mundane. But you still got to do it. Because only then will people go, okay, you know what? They're understanding that the decisions that are being made outside of my control have real impact on me and to the person to the left and right of me. And by answering that question, what is the impact? That means you've had to consider what the impact is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Michael, thank you so much for spending time with us, with me, and our listeners. Do you have anything you like to plug? Are you doing anything? Or how can people get a hold of you if they want to know more about continuous confidence?
So I have a medium.com site that I put all my continuous confidence articles out on. I know you've got all my handles. They can reach out to me at mbright@continuousconfidence.com. You can send me an email, those kinds of things. We can talk. I'm just trying to help people understand how they can change their culture with very simple concepts that will revolutionize the way they do things. So
yeah, changing culture, one company at a time. But what an amazing, amazing story you have. Thank you very much for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good one.
You too.